You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Produced by Ave Maria Radio and broadcast through the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back. It is Catholic Connection. Our phone number, if you have a question or would care to comment, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. Our Holy Father is, he's just so amazing. His teachings are so, so relative to what's going on in our world today. And I think really about the beginning of his pontificate, and actually before he was even elected to the chair of Peter, when, of course, giving the homily at Blessed John Paul II's funeral, talking about this dictatorship of relativism. And it has just become so clear in the last 7 years that the Pope really is just so right on target on so many things affecting our culture. And that brings us to the topic for 2 cents this morning in terms of our Holy Father addressing this issue. He has had for many years this circle of students. They call it the Ratzinger Student Circle. It's been going on actually since 1977, and they just recently met at Castel Gandolfo. And they basically, can you imagine, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall to just to hear the discussions? So he meets with groups of his former students, and it's an opportunity for them to explain their thesis, to talk to him about core issues of the day. And I just thought it was very, very intriguing that based on, of course, the first reading for Sunday from the book of Deuteronomy on God's law, the Holy Father continues to drive home this point about truth. Truth is truth. And I believe it was Fulton Sheen who said, truth is truth, even if nobody believes it. And the lie is still a lie, even if everybody believes it. So here's the story again. I'll share it with you. Pope Benedict XVI telling a group of his former students that Christians should not be scared to uphold ethical truths despite the fear of being branded intolerant. And how many times have you been called intolerant or insensitive or out of touch or backward? In his homily, the Pope during the Sunday morning Mass at Castel Gandolfo explained that the concepts of truth and intolerance have almost fused together, so that to say that one has a truth becomes synonymous with intolerance. And we Christians do not dare to believe or to speak about the truth. The September 2nd liturgy at the Papal Summer Residence marked the conclusion of this year's Ratzinger Student Circle. Since 1977, the annual event has drawn together those who defended their thesis with the present Pope during his years teaching theology at various universities in Germany. According to Vatican Radio, Pope Benedict's homily was based on analysis of a passage in the book of Deuteronomy that recalled how Israel received God's law, which brought it authentic wisdom. The Pope says this wisdom was a gift to take joy in rather than the result of some individual genius. In a similar way, he said the Church is a universal Israel that must also take joy in God's gift of Christ, the law made flesh, without any sense of being triumphant, but with gratitude for a gift we did not create. We must learn to allow ourselves to be led by the truth. Then the truth will be able to shine through us anew for the salvation of the world. But here's the problem. The truth often hurts, and we don't like to hear the truth. We don't like to hear the truth about ourselves. We don't like to hear the truth about something we may be doing that goes against God. And we can be in total denial of what's really going on in terms of the truth and convincing ourselves that we are fine, because it's tough to change. For example, if we look at the topic of birth control and the health mandate, how many stories do we hear about the problems with the birth control pill? And how many people, even though, thanks be to God, Dr. Janet Smith's wonderful and powerful talk, Contraception, Why Not?, has been distributed to the millions around the world. How many have seen this or heard this outside of Catholic radio or outside of conservative talk radio? And even conservative talk stations aren't too swift to and quick to cover this issue of the problems with birth control. Now, the mandate they'll cover from a religious freedom perspective, of course, but they don't want to touch on the issue of birth control in many cases. And yet we don't look at what happens in society. We don't connect the dots. We don't want to see the truth because we're called intolerant, backward, out of touch, irrelevant. And yet if we just stop and take a look at the truth, it can reveal an awful lot to us. This is not, as we've been talking about yesterday, since the Holy Father mentioned this in the Angelus and also in the homily, this is not about God being some mean ogre in the sky, trying to squash our fun. And every time looking down and saying, oh, they're having way too much fun, we're just going to put an end to that. If you're a parent, you know what it's like to discipline children. Do you discipline your children just because you want to be mean to them? No. And I had a fifth grader raise his hand once when I was giving a talk. I said, why do your parents discipline you? He didn't hesitate for 1 second. Because they love us. End of story. Because they want what's best for us. They don't want us to get hurt. Now, if a fifth grader can get this, why can't adults get this? Because we're stubborn, and because of the fallen condition of man, and because, you know, it's tough to change, speaking from experience. Let's just take the issue of birth control, for example. Let's just look at the pill. Outside of all the other problems, it causes women depression, weight gain, actually a lower sex drive than a higher sex drive, does not protect women from sexually transmitted diseases, which are at epidemic proportions to the tune of about 19 million a year in this country. But it's also a cancer-causing drug. It was declared a Group 1 carcinogen by the World Health Organization. You read the package regarding the pill, and the information's right there. And yet yesterday at this rally outside the Democratic National Convention, some of the protesters and the speakers were dressed up as giant packages of birth control pills. And this is supposed to be freedom for women. Women are much more susceptible outside of HIV, outside of AIDS, much more susceptible to sexually transmitted diseases, the way our bodies are designed, than men. And many of the sexually transmitted diseases, and Dr. Meeker has been on this show talking about it over and over and over again, lead to and can lead to very damaging effects, including infertility in women. And yet, when we put this truth out there and we dare to try to speak the truth, just, for example, on the issue of birth control, we're called intolerant. The same, of course, about abortion. Here you have the supporters of Planned Parenthood, which many of these organizations within Planned Parenthood, these so-called clinics, are not even following the basic regulations. And you know what happened a couple of months ago in the state capitol in June when this issue came up. And, of course, anybody speaking against abortion was considered intolerant, backward. They had that whole big, ridiculous protest on the state capitol. But none of the facts got out there. None of the truth got out there. It was nothing but propaganda and showmanship. And now Planned Parenthood yesterday arguing that pro-life views amount to belief that women are inferior and should not have certain rights. Congresswoman Gwen Moore claimed that pro-life politicians are trying to remove women's basic rights. No, actually, we're trying to increase our health, reduce our risks, and also help us as far as our rights are concerned. And talk about rights. I have a right to religious freedom that's totally being violated by this mandate, but nobody wants to look at the truth of that fact. And the ability to control their destinies. No, I actually want you to have all the information at hand so you can have better control over your destiny. Summarizing every single member of a particular political party as believing that women are not created equal. No, actually, we believe we are created equal and in the image and likeness of God. But again, it goes back to what our Holy Father was talking about, the truth. And this idea that is put out there that if you speak the truth, you're just being intolerant. But we have to continue to do that as often as possible and, of course, as lovingly as possible. Now, sometimes you can't always do it lovingly. Sometimes there are going to be instances, as there were in Christ's own ministry, where there may be an instance where you have to turn the tables over in the temple. You know to what I'm referring. Sometimes things are going to get heated. when you're debating, if you're in a public format, you try to always, always maintain a professional decorum and a kind decorum. But, you know, this is a very, very heated topic, and sometimes it could get very emotional. And there is a certain amount of righteous anger that's involved here, especially when we're talking about the killing, the slaughtering of the innocents with abortion, and the real attacks and the real war on women. When the truth is continually twisted and suppressed and pushed aside and denied, just from a factual basis. I'm not talking about that the secular press should be out there promoting, you know, quote-unquote, all religious principles all the time, but for crying out loud, can we get some truth out there? But our Holy Father is again reminding us, as he reminded his students, as he reminded the people on Sunday that showed up for his Angelus at Castel Gandolfo, that we have to speak the truth. His homily based on an analysis of a passage in the book of Deuteronomy that recalled how Israel received God's law, which brought in authentic wisdom. Holy Father says we have no choice but to speak the truth in love, especially now, especially in today's culture. In his Sunday morning mass at Castel Gandolfo, the Pope explained the concepts of truth and intolerance have almost fused together. Isn't that true, as I just pointed out? So that to say that no one has a truth, anyone who has truth becomes synonymous with intolerance. And we Christians do not dare to believe or to speak about the truth. But the Pope said we need to. We need to share this wisdom. It's our duty. It's our responsibility. And all of us, in the end, will be held accountable. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Welcome back. It's Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. Phone number, if you have a question for Matthew Hill, Helpers of God's Precious Infants, is 877-573-7825. Before we get into that, some breaking news for you. We just found out that Pope Benedict XVI naming Bishop Connolly, Auxiliary Bishop, of course, of Denver, the ninth bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska, and accepted the resignation of Bishop Bruskowitz, who's 77 years old and who, of course, is stepping down as a pastoral governance of the Diocese of Lincoln, which normally happens. They usually put in their resignation when they're 75. The appointment and resignation were publicized in Washington today by Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, Apostolic Nuncio to the United States. Bishop Connolly is a native of Kansas, actually a native of Overland Park, which is a suburb of Kansas City, and a convert to Catholicism. Served as a priest for 23 years before his episcopal ordination, including 10 years of service to the Holy Father as an official in the Vatican Congregation for Bishops in Rome. In 2008, he was appointed an auxiliary bishop of Denver. So congratulations to the soon-to-be new bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska. Of course, we're talking about Bishop Connolly. So very exciting news, and we will keep you up to date on those developments. But hot off the presses, Tom Price sent this to me this morning from his phone, and so I just wanted to give you the latest, because we're all about latest and breaking news in the Catholic world. Once again, it is good to be with you on a Friday morning, and always good to talk with the folks at Helpers of God's Precious Infants. Hey, Matthew, how are you?
Good. And yourself, Teresa?
Good. You've got a big event coming up a week from tomorrow, correct?
Yes, yes. Next Saturday we have one of our sort of quarterly prayer vigils, which we invite all to come and join us.
Now, the last time you had this with the Archbishop, you had a huge turnout on 8 Mile. I mean, it was just a beautiful picture that they put in the Michigan Catholic with the Archbishop kneeling and then so many pro-lifers behind him.
Absolutely. And I think that's something, I mean, we started this about 10 years ago, and it's something that we have just seen grow in terms of attendance. And obviously, with the Archbishop there, it's great to have the Archdiocese sort of gathered around him in prayer for this event.
All right, so give us the details of it, Matthew.
Well, it will be next Saturday, September 22nd. We'll have Mass at St. Joan of Arc, a Catholic church on Greater Mac in St. Clair Shores at 7:30 in the morning. And immediately after that, we will gather at St. Veronica's, which is just off of 8 Mile and Universal. And we will have a short procession from St. Veronica's out to the median strip at 8 Mile, and we'll pray the rosary there, as well as the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, in front of the two clinics. It's really kind of sad. There are two clinics almost across the street from each other, and both of them are getting business, of course. And we pray in front of both of those clinics, and then we conclude with a benediction back at St. Joan of Arc's, and refreshments will follow.
What type of an impact does it have when you have more than, let's say, just a few people outside there on a Saturday? Not that that's not important, because as long as there's someone there, you're providing hope and help and healing. But when you have a large crowd and when they see clergy, does that make a difference, do you think?
It has a huge impact, and I just want to emphasize not only the visual impact, but as an organization, the week following these vigils, we feel the spiritual impact of the turns and the, you know, it's amazing not just to see, okay, yes, of course, the numbers are important and the visual impact of that on the people going in and out of the clinic and, of course, on the people driving by, but also the spiritual impact of all those people out there praying for life we can't say enough about that.
Let's talk a little bit what's going on right now in our culture. So much misinformation, lies put out there about, obviously, not just abortion, but so many things, sexuality, birth control. What impact does this have, do you think, on the abortion industry itself, this misinformation?
Well, you know, Jesus called the devil the father of lies, and we fight that battle in a unique way every day out on the sidewalk where people... Even just basic science don't know, you know, when does the heart start beating? When do brainwaves start? And this sort of tsunami or flood of misinformation, I think, really does negatively impact people, and it makes abortion sort of thinkable. You know, they don't realize there's a beating heart here. They don't realize there's, you know, this isn't just a clump of cells. This isn't just a... you know, this isn't just something, a glob of tissue. It's a living human being. And, you know, we need to do what we can to really get that information out there so that we can, you know, begin to change minds and hearts.
Now, coming up on next Saturday, will there be information for folks if they want to become one of the sidewalk counselors?
Absolutely. And, you know, Teresa, that's always a need that we have. You know, Dan works really hard to schedule us as counselors out there. And, of course, the clinics are open during the week when people are working at their regular jobs. And so, you know, as many volunteers as we can get to take some time out there. And, you know, when I started doing this, I was a little hesitant and thought, you know, gee, can I do this and what's it going to be like? And it's really very easy, and it's really, in many, many ways, there's no confrontation. It's one of the things I love about the organization is it's very low-key and just expressing care and concern for the mother and the child. And so, you know, yeah, we will have information there, and Dan would be thrilled if there were people in your listening audience who felt called to and able to sort of step up and take some time, you know, even if it's just to come out on another day to pray. You know, we have people who come out just to say the rosary personally in front of the clinics while we're out there counseling. And that, too, is a huge support to us that we know that other people are there sort of having our back spiritually.
I read a very chilling story in the news this morning. I don't know if you heard it, but let me read it, share it with you. This would not happen with any other type of quote-unquote surgery, Matthew. You know, you and I know this, and so do our listeners. The California Catholic Conference rallying the state's voters to urge Governor Jerry Brown to veto a bill extending a training program that allows non-physicians, including midwives, to perform abortions. The legislation, Senate Bill 623, extending a University of California San Francisco study that is considering the safety and effectiveness of abortion provision by non-medical providers. The study began in 2007 and presently allows nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, and physician assistants to perform abortions. Are you kidding me? Can you imagine if this was something else?
We're going to have nurses do heart surgery.
Why not? I mean, you don't have to be an OBGYN to do an abortion, so I guess what difference does it make? But see, this is what I was talking about earlier, these lies and the misinformation. And we're the ones who are accused of not caring about women's health.
Well, you know, the other thing, and I think we can see this story in a certain sense, I know this sounds a little weird to say, as a sign of hope, because I think what we are seeing, and something that's not making the newspapers, is doctors are getting out of this business. You know, doctors are an abortionist that our organization knows has gone actually to workshops to learn plastic surgery because he feels that this is a declining business and he needs to do something else. And so, you know, you're finding doctors get out of this. And I think this law in California is a bit of a desperate move on organizations like Planned Parenthood and others that support abortion because they need to have providers.
And, I think what we're going to start seeing, though, I think we're going to start seeing, though, is an increase in the push for more abortifacients and also for, you know, this online, the video prescription approval for certain abortifacients. It's just insanity. But the whole bottom line is the bottom line here, Matthew. They want to do this because, as you said, having the doctors there, because of, I think, the work of the pro-lifers, there are restrictions and whatnot, a lot of restrictions, which should be necessary if you're performing surgery, for goodness sake. But my concern is that, one would think, but my concern is that they're going to increase the push for more and even more dangerous abortifacients, if there's anything but dangerous abortifacients.
I'm sure. And, you know, with you mentioned the cost here and that sort of thing. And, you know, we look at the declining number of, for example, the most obvious one is the decline in births of Down syndrome babies.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that children who suffer from various handicaps, even if they aren't very severe handicaps, are being aborted. And, you know, as we move into, you know, with all of the political stuff and the financial stuff and the political budgets and things, obviously it's expensive to take care of a handicapped child. And, you know, you can see people thinking, well, we can have abortion here and we can save ourselves money. You know, it's a terrible, terrible thing to think.
Did you happen to see the film October Baby yet?
I have not. Oh, I've heard very good things about it.
It's beautiful. It's really well done. And the interesting thing is you can see the negative of fallout, the long-term fallout that abortion has on people. In this case, you're probably familiar a little bit with the story, but the girl is adopted. Mm-hmm. She survives an attempted, failed abortion by her mother, and she's adopted by a wonderful Christian family. But it's a series of, you could see it's like dropping that petal in the water and seeing the ripple effect. In this case, a tsunami on the lives of those involved. I don't know. I guess we just have to keep just going every single day and doing whatever we can and having vigils like this and the power of prayer and people turning around and just never, ever, ever give up.
You know, I take great consolation from the quotation that's attributed to Mother Teresa of Calcutta when she said, you know, God does not ask us to be successful. He asks us to be faithful.
Right.
You know, and I think I know that can get hard in my own life. I know that can maybe even be depressing sometimes when we don't see the fruit of what we're doing, but we're called to do what we know to be right and good, and let the chips fall where they may, and we need to be true to what we know is right and good.
Well, absolutely, and keep doing what you're doing. You do great work, and Dan Goodenow, what an angel. He's just
absolutely
amazing.
Absolutely.
I just think the world of him. All right, let's give out the phone number. If people, for example, if they want to find out more about Precious Helpers of God's Precious Infants, but also if they want to attend the event on the 22nd, starting at St. Joan of Arc, my parish, by the way, just putting a little plug in there.
Well, just a real quick recap. Next Saturday, Mass at 7:30 at St. Joan of Arc on Greater Mac, followed by the Rosary Pilgrimage and concluded with benediction back at St. Joan of Arc. For more info, you can call 313-530-4539.
And the Archbishop will be celebrating Mass, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And also leading the vigil. Okay,
yes.
Gotta love that. Well,
he will be joining us for that.
Come on by my parish. We're very nice on the east side. We're not mean or anything. There's no sea monsters, although we're very close to the lake.
You don't bite.
We don't bite. No. Nope. Thanks, Matthew. God love you. Keep up the great
work.
Thanks,
Teresa.
Yep. Tell Dan
bye-bye.
I said hi. Bye-bye.
I will.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back. It's 8:34. Teresa Tomeo, live from Arlington, Texas. We are at the Exhibit Hall, the Catholic Marketing Network trade show, just a few miles outside of Dallas. And in studio on the floor with me, of course, my operations manager, Steve Clark, helping us again on the air here every morning. And our first guest as we're here live this week, Marlon De La Torre. He's the author of Screwtape Teaches the Faith. It's a guide for catechists. And you're breaking down in this book, which I think is a really cool idea, the classic book, of course, of C.S. Lewis, chapter by chapter, going through the devil's specific temptation in each. Now, you're director of catechesis formation and elementary catechesis for the Diocese of Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. What I think is brilliant about this is so timely for what we're seeing in our world right now.
Correct. It's been apropos in many ways, because what we're going through right now, with the election and with everything else that we're being attacked with respect to our faith, kids would ask me all the time when this book came to fruition, how do we defend it? We want to know what is, what isn't. Mm-hmm. What can we do, what can we not do? And give us convincing arguments, as they would call Mr. D, as to what can we do to at least have an idea of expressing the faith. And so C.S. Lewis's Screwtape provided that backdrop for it, because the catechism served as the vehicle, in essence, to debunk Screwtape. And that was the premise for the book in the classroom, teaching the kids, all right, how can we, in essence, defeat the devil as his own game? And so Screwtape came to fruition.
One of the biggest things that Lewis, I think, was trying to say is that the devil, if the devil can convince us that he doesn't exist, he's won, which is what we have in our culture. Nobody calls sin sin anymore.
Correct. They call it a mistake or an error.
But then again, sometimes they don't even call it that. If they want to choose whether it be abortion or contraception or another intrinsic evil,
absolutely,
they accept it. Mm-hmm. They do not. They call it just the opposite, a lifestyle or whatever.
It becomes natural.
Right. So where else do you see this taking place in our culture in terms of people just not believing that sin is sin and we really have, we don't have anything to worry about?
From my background, let's take the parent. The parent has an ultimate responsibility to guide the child in some way, shape, or form, right and wrong. What I've seen in the last 15 to 17 years that I've been involved, they deviate from telling their child the truth, meaning they're deviating from really holding him or her accountable. This is a sin. This is an immoral act. Lying, there is an intrinsic evil to lying. And the fact that parents would advocate their child to, if you lie, that's all right. It's not really a lie. You know what? This is part of your survival. And that's how I've seen a lot of parents teach their children. Case in point, one short story with this book. When we covered Screwtape and we covered the catechism, in particular Original Sin, it brought the children back, the students, to get to confession, to address the act that they were committing, to the point where my class of 22, that when we were dealing with this book, we all went to confession. To the point where one of my students came back to me and said, I got to get my dad to confession. And so he did. And the father came to me the next day and he asked me bluntly, what are you doing to my son? I said, what do you mean? He's asking me to go to confession. We've never gone to confession together. That's something that he has to do because he's in Catholic school, not me. That's why I send him to you. Mm-hmm. That was his response.
Wow.
And so the father kept hammering me. It's like, what are you doing? And I said, sir, all I'm trying to do is convey to your son that there's a reality that does exist, and that Catholicism must be part of that reality. It can't be ignored. And if that's the case, then you know what? Your son understands reality when it comes to his faith. And that's all we're trying to convey. But you're forcing me to do something that I haven't done in years. Exactly. That's what we want. We want you home. And eventually, it took him about a month. He went to confession, hadn't gone to Mass for about almost a year, came back. And so that's one of the little stories as a result of the book and the students who really dove into this work and saw the fruit of how the catechism can help them understand their faith more from a simple literary work as Screwtape Letters.
When the young people are given the truth, they respond to it.
They do. They don't want to be lied to. They don't want to be played. If you have credibility, they will follow your credibility. And the problem sometimes is that they're not given the opportunity to view the church with credibility. They're given, or they hear, the negativity of the church. They hear the contra against the church. But when you present a convincing argument, and they see it for what it is, they tend to follow that reality, which is the truth of the church. And that book proved to be a good weapon for me and my students to see the light of Christ.
Interesting that we're talking about this on the memorial of the Passion of St. John the Baptist. Mm-hmm. If you look at what St. John the Baptist did, calling out Herod
absolutely
and Herodias for their sins, and then off with his head for
correct.
It. Which is, as I was telling Steve before you came on, you may have heard our conversation, that right now we're in the midst of, I think, a white martyrdom.
It is.
In the church.
Absolutely.
But I have no doubt that sooner than later, if things continue on this path, we could be seeing people of faith behind bars, and
absolutely.
God forbid, because that is how strong the force against us is in terms of the people do not want to recognize sin. We are a problem. You know, woe to those who call good evil and evil good. That's what's happening in our culture right now.
Correct. That's one of the things. I have three kids. My oldest is 13. And he asked me a question 2 weeks ago. Dad, why is it that people shrug when they hear Catholicism or when they see us make the sign of the cross in public? I said, son, it's not a question of they're shrugging because they don't understand. They just don't know. And through that lack of knowledge comes ignorance. Through that ignorance comes an unwillingness to at least ask why we make the sign of the cross in public. And that's one of the elements that reflected the book as well, because my students were afraid to make the sign of the cross, many of them, in public, or when we had a function somewhere. In particular, where I was in Tennessee, we had a function in Nashville, and so we took them to a field trip, and then we all gathered for lunch. All right, guys. You know the drill. Bless them before meals. So we had 25 kids make the sign of the cross. One person stood up and was disgusted and said, "No, you can't do that." And I said, and the kids were stunned because we were making the sign of the cross as a public profession of faith in his restaurant, even though we overtook the restaurant.
Right.
But this person was bothered by that symbolism.
Well, there was a check in his spirit, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so you have that nice little wedge between good and evil, so to speak. But one of the students, why would he be bothered by something that really doesn't affect him personally? I said, it's not a question of him being bothered. It's a question also of him not understanding what we stand for. And if he does know what we stand for, then we pray for him. And that's all we can do. We're not chastising him or anything else, but stand firm in your witness. Do not be afraid, even if they shrug, for whatever reason. It's Colossians chapter 3, 1 through 3, everything in Christ. And for them, that was an eye-opener.
I know this book is for catechists, but really, aren't we all supposed to be catechists?
We are. We're all called by nature to be catechists. If you have the ability to bring a person to Christ in communion, you're a catechist, which is what our call is by right. And the fact to reflect the image and likeness of God. So, I mean, the book is not just for teachers. I've had parents call me, use the book. I've had high school groups, young adult groups use it as a study. Because, in essence, the theme has been, for them, we want to know how the devil works, per se, and what to do to arm ourselves to deal with these fallacies that are around us. And so it's been actually more than what I anticipated as a tool for the general Catholic on the pew.
Chapter 12, I'm very interested in the great deception. Of course, you use a verse from 1 John chapter 1. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us, 1 John 1:8. And you go on to say, in the general theme, one of the greatest weapons against man's relationship with Christ is the notion that they have done just enough prayer or devotion to get by, which is such a Catholic approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll go to Mass once a week, if that, put in my tokens and pull the one-armed bandit, and everything will be fine with God.
Correct.
Screwtape encourages Wormwood to have the patient continue to attend church, but in reality have no foundation as to why he still practices his Christian faith. As long as he retains externally the habits of a Christian, he can still be made to think of himself as one who has adopted a few new friends and amusements, but whose spiritual state is much the same as it was 6 weeks ago. This particular sentiment serves as a main theme in this chapter. The exterior represents a perception of fidelity, while interiorly the complete opposite is present. Hence the great deception. That is exactly what is going on in so much of our church.
Absolutely.
With so many people being fine with abortion, being fine with gay marriage, oh, let's just be nice and let's just love everybody.
Absolutely. One of the greatest things that I've come across has been the whole misunderstanding of the social justice doctrine. And
how much time do we have?
Whatever time you want. But it creeps in for us as teachers. It creeps in so intimately in curriculums, in textbooks.
But why does that happen when all the teachings of the church are meant to complement each other and work together? You don't take the social justice teachings and compartmentalize, nor do you take the life teachings and compartmentalize.
Correct. Because it requires a twofold approach. One, are you willing to help the individual need? But are you willing to call on his sinful act as well? It has to be a twofold approach in the social justice doctrine. You can't just perform a good work and expect immediate salvation or gratification. And you can't also expect to do a social work and negate what's at the root of that social justice.
Right.
Or you just can't. Our kids would tell us, well, as long as I serve the poor, I'm okay, right, Mr. D? He's like, no. No, there's an element there that's sacramental that drives you to do that social work. You can't separate either or. They're not separate components. And that's where the cause for abortion, contraception, euthanasia, all these different nuggets that were under the social justice doctrine that fair, compassion sound great on the surface, but in reality are a disruption to the very fabric of the moral life. It's the whole premise of the rule of faith. If Moses gave us the commandments in Exodus 20 as the rule of faith, the foundation.
Right, the foundation.
And then Christ confirmed it in Matthew 5 in the Beatitudes. It was the premise of both rule of faith and acting on that faith. Social justice reflects on that rule of faith. You must act on it, not just preach it. It has to be one and the other. It's got to be both in both ends. And if you separate either one, then you don't have that topology. You don't have the connection. You can't have one without the other. It just doesn't work. However, for whatever reason, and we can spend all day explaining them, that's exactly what's happened. And it's seeped into our students. I've had students argue with me, women have a right to an abortion. We've had to break them down because my mom says so. So mom says it's all right. Fine. And I explain to them, well, what is the root cause of that abortive act? What drives that woman to seek an abortion? Well, it's because she was raped. Really? Not wanting to discredit that, but there are other elements involved related to abortion than just one particular act. It's a constant battle, but it's one that at least for those who have told me they've read the book, they get the idea now, the deception, but they're not completely armed yet, and that's where we come in as catechists to try to arm them to defend faith.
Do you find that most of the parents you're running into, because you have the opportunity to teach the young people in terms of what the church actually says and get into some of the teachings, I would say, I mean, I'll be 53 on Saturday, and I say most of us our age in our 40s and our 50s, and maybe even those in their 30s, did not have access or did not make them, they weren't readily available, granted, on the Internet until maybe about, I'd say about maybe, what, 15 years ago, probably.
Sure enough.
So we didn't have access to the teachings. I mean, we could have if we had gone to the library or went out of our way to find them, but even now, I think most people have not read the teachings.
Correct.
And so they're operating on the deceptions that were given to them by the world. And what's that old saying that we used to hear quite a bit, especially after World War II? If you tell a lie long enough, everybody will believe it if you repeat it enough. And that's what happened, lie after lie after lie. There is no truth getting out there about these various issues that you just mentioned.
No, I think one of the things that they still live by, many parents in this particular age bracket, humana vitae is still wrong.
But how many of them have read it? It's a fairly short document.
It's a short document. Yeah. None. They only know. I mean, I can rattle off theologians who aided that deception, but that's not the point. They take everything at face value, just like the whole issue of if I sit in the last pew at church, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But are you really participating in the Mass? And not classifying anybody who's in the pew in the back, but if you have the opportunity to move forward, to see clearly what Christ offers, not just in the altar, not just in the tabernacle. That goes back to the same point of not willing to read or study or to at least objectively look at what the church teaches.
Well, it's work.
It is.
And we don't want to work. We just want to coast, and we can't do that
Absolutely.
In any relationship that we have. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to wrap up with Marlon DeLaTorre, his book, Screwtape Teaches of Faith. And how do we get the book?
You go through St. Benedict Press, actually.
Oh, okay. Great.
Tan St. Benedict Press.
They just produced a whole series of DVDs with me.
They did, yeah.
So I'm excited. Yeah. They're supposed to be coming out this fall.
They've been great to work with.
Wonderful. Screwtape Teaches of Faith, a guide for catechists. We'll be right back. If you have a question for Marlon, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. And what a great cover, too, with the devil at the computer.
Isn't that great?
We'll be right back, and we're live from Arlington, Texas.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Welcome back. Wrapping up with Marlon DeLaTorre, who is a native here in the Dallas area, and is telling me that he's married to a beautiful woman who happens to be 100% Italian. I'm very impressed she makes her own pasta.
She does.
That's not an easy thing. It takes time.
Yeah,
so.
She even makes now her own flour tortillas.
Wow.
So she's got me beat. So, yeah, she's got both Italian and Mexican
there
covered.
There you go. Yeah. And we're talking about your book, which is Screwtape Teaches of Faith. It's a guide for catechists and actually a guide for all of us. It's from St. Benedict Press, Tan Books. So we can go on Amazon. We can go on their website. Do you have a website?
I do. It's a simple one. It's called Knowing is Doing.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, very cool.
.com. It's a basic premise that my father-in-law used to say about people in sense. Like, they know what they're doing.
Right.
And so I just took that moniker and just applied it. It's a very modest site, but it's a tool website where I have a lot of lesson plans and sources for catechists, so very modest.
Now, you're the director of catechist formation and also elementary catechesis for the Diocese of Fort Worth, so you must be friends with Bishop Vann.
I am, yes.
I was telling Steve, and he kind of looked at me rather strangely about his Our Lady of Guadalupe leather boots.
Oh, yes, and his Our Lady of Guadalupe bed cover and his Our Lady of Guadalupe iPhone cover, yes.
I really admire him. He's done some great work and some great teaching. Mm-hmm. I try to go on the different diocesan websites and read what the bishops are saying because I find their newsletters and their columns to be very helpful to me, not only as a talk show host, but as a Catholic woman in the 21st century. In terms of suggestions, before
Please.
We wrap up, parents are using this book, how would you suggest they use this?
I think definitely as a study in the catechism, for one, because of the references throughout. I break down all four pillars and all 32 chapters of the book, and so they'll see a value in terms of the catechism and its practicality. Also, just reading Screwtape Letters in general, but not just within the eyes of C.S. Lewis, but through the eyes of how the Church can be woven into this beautiful literary work with the catechism. For high school kids, it could be used as a bridge or leverage for a parent to discuss sin, to discuss the basic teachings of the Church. Mm-hmm. It can be used for young adults to really see it as a retreat or a spiritual journey in the faith as well. So those are some of the uses. Classroom setting, obviously as a curriculum, because you can take each chapter per week and extrapolate all the scripture, the catechism references, the glossary as well, to a teacher's advantage and really hone in on what the Church is saying and what C.S. Lewis meant related to Screwtape. One of the things about Screwtape, C.S. Lewis, when asked why he wrote this, he said, well, he wanted to get into the mind of the devil. And what scared him the most when he wrote this book was how easy it was to put it together.
Wow.
That's what scared him, is that this was the work that was easiest to write about, the devil himself. So that gave him an appreciation of what we're dealing with and what we're up against. It's that easy to fall at a snap of a finger. And so I'm seeing that with kids fall all the time and with their parents. This was an inspiration of the Holy Spirit. So I've got to do something about this, and at least give them some tools to fight the good fight of faith.
It makes so much sense when you step back and you think about it. And I always tell folks, I was speaking in Kansas over the weekend, and I was telling the ladies
diocese,
there, Salina Diocese, great area, did three talks, and I was saying, you know, the Catholic faith is not an easy faith. It's a thinking person's faith.
It is.
But when you think and you take the time to connect the dots, it's all there.
Correct. It's one of the things that I've done. One of my roles here is to teach teachers how to teach and to break things down. Teachers come to me and say, I don't know how to teach. And this is either at a parish level or a Catholic school level. They don't know how to convey or articulate the faith in some way, shape, or form. They get book stuck, for lack of a better term. So we're trying to help them think and think outside the box, not just resources, catechism, sacred scripture, but lives of the saints. What does the Church tell you? And so my job is to help them break this down for all age levels. It is a thinking person's faith. They need to know.
Yeah, but I love to think about what the Church thinks.
Exactly. It's
because I was so brain dead for so long.
Well, right? And now you filled it very well.
Well, let me ask you, in terms of speaking, do you go around and speak, give presentations?
I do. I'll be in Nashville in September.
Great.
And then I do the Diocese of Dallas October, and then Kansas City in November. So part of my mission is to teach teachers how to teach.
Great.
And so bishops have called me, dioceses call me to do symposiums, workshops, how to break things down and how to make them more effective at all age levels. So a lot of that, not just internally, Bishop Vann has given me the blessing. He wants me to go out and to use that talent, use that tool, and help others. And so far it's been very worthwhile, very rewarding, and may God continue to bless me to do it.
And you have a book signing here at the Trade Show?
I do. At noon with St. Benedict Press.
Great.
I'm looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Well, it's really nice to meet you.
Likewise.
And tell your wife thanks for the offer for dinner, and then I'll take you guys up on it next time I'm in town.
Amen. You're on.
I'd love to taste her sauce. I bet you it's really good.
You're
we
on.
Could have a sauce tasting test.
She would love that.
We're trying to work that out with Bishop Sistone of Saginaw. Because he apparently makes very good Italian meatballs, but I said we should have a meatball contest between me and the bishop.
I'd probably have
to defer to the bishop, because otherwise I think it would be like an extra 30 years in purgatory.
You probably already blessed
like
the meatballs or something.
Well, listen, thanks for coming by
so bright
and early. The book is Screwtape Teaches a Faith, a Guide for Catechists, Marlon D. Latore, and I really enjoyed our conversation. This is good stuff.
Thank you.
And thanks
Appreciate
for doing
it,
this. God bless you.
God bless.
Up next, we are going to continue our live programming here at the floor of the trade show. Alan Napleton, the press president of the Catholic Marketing Network, really responsible for this whole thing getting underway. He'll join us up next and maybe some ideas on how to help you market the faith yourself. Maybe there's something you want to get out there to make a difference.